Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast. I'm Jamie, joined by John. How you doing?
Dude, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good. Trying to turn my headphones up. I can't hear you. I like to hear your voice.
Well, I like to hear your voice too. That's nice pretty good after 6 years, right?
It better be, because we're not stopping anytime soon. Guys, we've got a good one for today. I mean, we do this every week, obviously. Some cases are good and interesting, and some I get really excited about, and this is one of those.
I like the small town like cases that a lot of people haven't heard of yet. And I feel like this is one of them. However, I know 48 Hours did do something on this one. So maybe a lot more people know about it than I do.
Yeah. Know,
more than I thought.
Well, it was one I was unfamiliar with, and there weren't a lot of other podcasts that had covered it leading up to this. And I'm excited to give it our take. But first, I want to thank some individuals that have written some 5-star reviews over on Apple Podcasts. This comes from Nader_SHAH, so Nader Shaw,
perhaps. I was thinking Nader, like a mater.
Of course you were. This says, your podcast was one of the first podcasts I started listening to. I will not forget. I was in dental school in 2019, was in the dental lab practicing for the practical portion of dental licensure. I listened to the first and couldn't stop. I would go to the lab, put on the headphones, and listen to your podcast while practicing. Then after I graduated, I drove from Florida to California, and I was listening to your podcast along the way. You're both amazing, great selection, and great analysis. Thank you. Does this mean we get discounted dental work?
I think so.
Dental work's expensive.
My goodness, traveling from Florida to California, coast to coast.
Have to have something to keep you awake. I hope we did.
Next time, just holler at us. We'll go with you. We can talk about all kinds of stuff.
We can just talk the whole time. That's fine with me.
You'll get really tired of us real quick.
This one comes from JLB0861. It says, I always keep an eye out for podcasts that I look forward to listening to every week. There just aren't that many I find interesting enough to stay engaged and look forward to hearing each week. But these guys have stayed at the top of my 5 regulars since I found them about 3 years ago. I'm glad to support them on Patreon. More than worth it. Thanks for your hard work and dedication, John and Jamie. The title of this one is actually Best $3 I Spend Monthly.
Awesome.
That's a big compliment. And our Patreon supporters, in case you haven't heard this before, are the reasons we're still doing this. That's very motivational and exciting, and we're very thankful for all that support.
I pumped gas this morning and noticed it was like $3.50 a gallon. And I mean, I know that in California, it's probably twice that.
Yeah.
I'd like to say that even during the most crazy inflation of all time, our prices have stayed the same.
They have.
For less than a gallon of gas, I always say a gallon of milk. But now for less than a gallon of gas, you can get 6 years worth of content over there. And we released last week a brand new fictional podcast called Left on Dead. And that is exclusively available right now to Patreon members. And then it will hit the podcast air on August 10th. So you can listen to it early by signing up on Patreon.
And ad-free, as always, as all of our episodes are over there.
Do have a couple of folks I want to thank for Patreon. Michelle came in at the $30 level, which is the $3 level, but took advantage of a 15% discount by signing up for an annual membership. And then we had some other folks that edited their pledges around. So guys, thank you so much for all your continued support over on Patreon. And like Jamie said, early ad-free episodes from our regular show, Left on Dead's over there right now until August 10th. That's the only place you can listen to that. And then we have a bonus episode each and every month.
Good one this month too, about black metal.
The black metal inner circle. Yeah. And boy, it was wild. It reminded me of myself in high school, minus a lot of crazy stuff.
The goth stage. I get it. Well, I'll tell you what. You grew up in a small town where it was probably awkward to be goth. But this case takes place in a small town in Pennsylvania. So why don't you get us rolling?
And has nothing to do with being goth.
Nothing at all.
So this is a story of a woman in a small town in Pennsylvania with layers and layers of detail and corruption. And we're going to do our best to walk you through it. We're going to be talking about a woman named Rachel Del Tondo, who is a teacher in Alquippa, Pennsylvania, just outside of Pittsburgh. She was extremely close with her parents, and she actually wanted to live at home with them until she got married. And dude, with the price of what it costs to live nowadays, if my kids want to do that, I'm all about it.
You going to make them pay rent?
Maybe.
She said
a few hundred dollars.
She told her friends that this was part of being Italian. She was very proud of her Italian heritage. She was bright and bubbly and said, this is what Italian women do. Until I get married, I'm going to live at home. She also loved working with children. She was a teacher. She was very hardworking. When she started her career, she was actually a substitute teacher in elementary school. My wife used to be a teacher, and that's really how you have to get your foot in the door, by substituting, by letting people meet you so that they know that you can do the job and they bring you in full time. It was there that she met a very young boy named Sheldon Jeter Jr. He was a student at the elementary school. While he wasn't in her class, she did meet him there. Keep that in mind.
Are we going to refer to him as young Sheldon from now on?
We definitely. That ran through my mind as well, especially being named Junior. That just made it compounded. There was a group of boys at this elementary school that did include Sheldon, and their teacher used to tell them if they were good, they could go down the hall to see Miss D, which is what they called Rachel, after class. The boys loved Miss D because she was kind, and she was very beautiful.
So as a reward, if they were well behaved in class, they got to go see a beautiful teacher? Was that like the intention behind
these
it?
These are
like,
second and third graders. That's who she was teaching.
So this is not high school boys. Like, go down and see the pretty teacher.
Yeah. And you wonder, I don't know, kids that age still think girls have cooties. But she was a beautiful woman and very kind and loving. And I can think of some teachers in my kid's life who were that kind and welcoming that they always wanted to go to her class. I don't know that it had to do with how she looked.
But that she made them feel loved and warm.
Yeah.
In her personal life, Rachel was in a long-term relationship with a man named Frank Catrapa. Frank was a very successful businessman in his local town. In fact, one local publication called him the Wolf of Aliquippa.
Is that a compliment?
I think of a wolf as someone who does bad things at dark. You know?
I think of the term wolf has negative connotations, but I think what they mean here is just he's getting everything he wants. He's going after it.
I want to be referred to as like the elephant of Jellicoe. I don't know.
You are in several forums. I write that in.
And this guy was also the son of a former police officer. So, I mean, all jokes aside, he's well known in town. He's a businessman. His dad is a former police officer in the town. So he's well respected. But Rachel and this guy had a pretty on again, off again relationship. They were in love, but had very different ideas about their future. So Frank didn't want to commit, but Rachel was eager to get married and have children. So the two actually went to Paris in 2015 and got engaged on their trip. That's so romantic.
It really is. And if you hear people tell this story, it was really day to day, whether they were together or not. And Frank, she had literally said, when are you going to put a ring on my finger? Like regularly to him. Like, so this is kind of him giving in, but at least he had a good plan with it.
Yeah. Our producer agent, Nate, is in Paris right now. I'm wondering if he comes back engaged now.
Oh, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Just speak that into existence.
Good luck, Nate.
Anyway, so they got back home and they immediately started planning the wedding, but things came to a screeching halt when Frank brought up having Rachel sign a prenuptial agreement.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you're familiar with what this is. Basically, it is, we're going to get married, but all the assets that I have from before we get married are mine. And if something happens to me, they're not yours. Or if we get divorced, you're not entitled to any of my stuff.
Or you only get 10%, not half. If there is no agreement in place, the legal idea is that you split everything down the middle. And this is basically saying, I'm rich. You're not going to get rich just by marrying me.
Yeah. So I don't know, if you're really in love, you would think there's no need to sign that.
Seems like that's the way that Rachel took it.
Yeah. So he told reporters that Rachel initially had no problem with the agreement, but it was her mother who stepped in and insisted that she not sign it. So they ended their engagement, but they continued dating for a couple more years.
Yeah, they continued to be on again, off again, didn't really get engaged and start planning a wedding again, but because of their history, they still had a strong bond. On February 6th of 2016, Rachel's life took a dark turn. At this point, she and Frank were together, but not engaged, so they were currently supposedly exclusive in seeing each other. When a police officer drove by a parking lot and saw a car sitting there. Now, my hometown, I remember people talking about, like, there's lovers' lanes, and sometimes they're just lovers' parking lots, and that's what this police officer assumed was happening. And when he got to the vehicle to check in, Rachel Del Tondo was in there with a 17-year-old high school student. That high school student's name, Sheldon Jeter Jr. He is now grown up, no longer in elementary school. He's a high school football star, and he's in the parking lot with the teacher that he loves so much in elementary school.
Well, I do want to be careful because you said he's grown up, but he's not legally an adult. He is still technically a minor.
Actually, in Pennsylvania, the legal age of consent is 16.
We have that in Kentucky, but if you're someone of authority over them, it kind of makes that null and void. So is that the same in Pennsylvania?
Yes. If there's that power dynamic, then charges can be filed because you're taking advantage of a situation.
I've always baffled by that law, because if that has to be a caveat, couldn't you also just say maybe the age of consent doesn't need to be so young?
Yes. Yeah. Let's just change all of it. I would not be opposed to that. She told police officers when they got there that they were just friends. He was going through a hard time and they were just talking. When they saw them, nothing was actively happening, so they had no evidence to refute her claim. But she also asked them specifically, don't tell Frank. She thinks he would get jealous for this, and I completely understand why. Police noted in a report that eventually came out that the windows were steamed over and the engine was not running. So if that's happening, that's usually how the windows get steamed up. But despite that, there weren't any charges filed. Like I said, there was no real further investigation at the time either. John, this has happened in our town more times than I would like to count, and I feel like it's always a priority. So I wonder why they didn't pursue this further.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like if I'm in the law enforcement, I don't know. What's protocol? Do you, since there was nothing happening, they had their clothes on, is it one of those things that we didn't catch you at the right time? So noted in the back of my mind, we'll follow up on this if needed.
Yeah, it's tough. But they did actually make Sheldon leave with them, and they took him back and dropped him off at his house.
Yeah, more than a year later, that's when a police report came out about this incident and when it was created. So there was a report, but not at the time, a year later. Interesting, yes. Right? So Police Chief Donald Couch told the media that this was done, quote, in case someone got wind of it, unquote.
So they made this report just in case somebody asked if they had a report. That seems disingenuous and probably not legal.
Yeah. So on the bottom of that report, there's a footnote or a footer, and all of those footers indicate that they were printed on May 2nd, 2017. So more than a year after the incident that you were just talking about. No one knew about this incident outside of those involved, except for one friend whose name was Jen that Rachel had confided in. And this ended up backfiring on Rachel. In October of 2017, Rachel and Jen were at a party when they started fighting. Now, Rachel hit Jen and upset her to the point that she told Frank about the incident in the car with the teenager. So now things are starting to get out. Frank demanded an explanation, and Rachel told him that Sheldon had messaged her on Facebook and that he was having a really hard time and needed somebody to talk to. Rachel told Frank she met Sheldon in the parking lot of a Circle K around 11 p.m. and that they were in the car talking when police approached them, and she swore that she was just trying to help a teenager in need. Let's talk about how inappropriate that is, even if that's the truth.
Yeah, you and I both volunteer with kids. You work with kids every day, and at least in our volunteering role, there are boundaries put in place. I would never be alone with a singular student in a situation like this, or else I would probably be let go from that opportunity. Because even, like, first of all, that's the way that these things happen. If they're going to happen, they happen in that scenario. So why put yourself there? But also, just in case any accusations come up, you never want to be alone for them to be able to accuse you of something and you have no, for lack of a better word, alibi or witness to help vouch that you didn't do these things. So she should have known readily that this was never okay, especially in 2017. By this time, this is commonplace in the news, right? We hear about this happening all the time. When Rachel ended up telling Frank about this and gave him her explanation, he said he believed her, but he wasn't really convinced. And we're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll talk about Frank's continued dive into what really happened and how that led to a horrible ending for Rachel. At this point in the story, Frank and Rachel aren't together. They were when the incident took place, but at this point they were broken up and Rachel wanted to get back together with Frank. Now, Frank wanted to be sure that he wasn't being made a fool of, so he got in touch with police and asked them if they had an incident report about this situation. There was an officer there that had told reporters that Frank was given the opportunity to view this incident report because of his relationship with the police station. But it wasn't something that most people could get their hands on. He made a copy of the report and took it home with them.
Now, police reports could be public information, but you would have to file like a form to get access to it, right?
Yeah, FOIA request.
So he was, because of his connection, just able to walk right in there and take a look at it.
Yeah, on one hand, I say that that sounds shady and like preferential treatment, that he should have had to go through the proper channels. But even if there was an active investigation into whatever may have happened there, then they could tell him that they couldn't disclose it because of the investigation pending.
Still wild to me that this report was printed in May the following year, but this is taking place in October. So the time gaps between when this incident took place and when it was printed, still kind of baffling to me. When Frank saw the report, he noticed that things were not lining up with what Rachel had told him. She didn't meet Sheldon at 11 p.m. The report said that it was 2 a.m. And they were not at a Circle K. They were in an abandoned lot. And like you said earlier, the windows were steamed up. And police documented that the passenger seat was reclined back. So after this, Frank went to Rachel, told her that they were officially done for good. This story was just too much, and that was the final straw.
Well, she had lied to him about all of it. It was probably the bigger deal. If she had been up front and said what they found and where they were, maybe this makes it a little easier to see the report. But
the trust is gone.
At the same time here, this report was written a year later. We know that eyewitness testimony is very flimsy at best. So if the officer didn't write anything down for a year, what are the chances that one of these details are off, right?
Yeah.
Coincidentally, a few days later, this police report was attached to an email and sent out to a bunch of people, to Rachel's employer, which was the Pennsylvania Cyber Charter Schools in Midland, county and state agencies, media outlets, and several of Rachel's friends. Rachel's parents are convinced that Frank anonymously leaked this report in hopes of causing Rachel harm, but he insists that he's not the one that sent this out. The email with the police report not only contained the story, but it also contained personal information that's only available to law enforcement, like social security numbers, license numbers, signatures. So there was a lot of confidential stuff in there, not just the incident narrative, which is probably what they wanted to get out.
The police chief told the press that this information, which should be confidential, was actually handed out in error to a member of the public when requested. Now, when this report was leaked, the Aliquippa police reiterated that they investigated the incident with Rachel and Sheldon, and they found no wrongdoing. Now, that did not stop the backlash in her life, though. She was placed on administrative suspension at her job while the Pennsylvania Department of Education conducted their own investigation. And at this same time, Rachel was depressed. She had stopped eating, And dude, she was even hospitalized in a psychiatric hospital for 3 days because of the emotional toil this was taking on her. Not only this situation, but now her relationship with Frank's gone too. So all kind of caving in on her at once.
And it's one thing if the information leaks to the police and you have that kind of stress of, are they going to say I did something wrong? Am I in trouble? To the media knowing about it and losing your career potentially. So a lot of stress is on Rachel at this point. After the information got out, the state police actually launched an investigation into the Aliquippa Police Department. And Rachel cooperated with them. She did not like that this had been handed out, quote unquote, in error. Starting in December of 2017, Rachel became a confidential source for a local publication known as the Beaver Countyan. Now, the Aliquippa was in Beaver County in Pennsylvania. She wanted to tell the real story of Aliquippa, as she put it, and talk about the corruption that was happening in the town and within the police station. She told reporters that she had been receiving death threats and that she thought the police had been stalking her. She told them about her cooperation with state police and the organized crime section of the Attorney General's office. By February 2018, state police have concluded that their administrative investigation was complete, but they were going to continue their criminal investigation.
Meanwhile, Rachel was trying to move on with her life. In December of 2017, she began a serious relationship with 31-year-old Rashawn Bolton. Now, he just happened to be Sheldon's half-brother.
Sheldon Jeter Jr.'s half-brother.
Is that interesting or what?
It's interesting, maybe confusing, maybe shady.
Yeah, so Rachel's mother said that this infuriated Sheldon, but Sheldon's uncle claims that he had moved on. Well, moved on from what? They were just hanging out in the parking lot, right?
Yeah, that's the story, right?
So she began spending more time with 17-year-old Lauren Watkins. Again, this is Rachel's 33 years old at the time.
Yeah.
We were born in the same year, and she had been spending time with Lauren, who was 17 years old, and happened to be the daughter of Aliquippa's police sergeant. So Lauren claims that she didn't feel the age difference and that Rachel would spend time with her, helping her with college applications and acting as a mentor. Now, the two enjoyed just driving around together, listening to music, things that teenagers do, but Rachel's in her almost mid-30s.
Yeah, I could totally see a relationship where Rachel's helping with college applications, acting as a mentor and giving life advice, but joyriding, I think, makes it a different kind of relationship. Not necessarily inappropriate, but it does change the view a little bit.
And I don't want to sound creepy, but I have a relationship with a good family friend of ours, son, who's 17 years old.
Yep.
And I'm a mentor for him. And we have been known to just hop in the car, ride around, play music, and chat. But we're the same sex. I know that doesn't mean anything necessarily, but there are times when people my age find themselves in a mentor relationship.
Okay.
So Rachel's therapist advised against this friendship with the teenager, but Rachel didn't want Lauren to feel bad or abandoned. So on May 13th, 2018, which happened to be Mother's Day, Rachel decided to go out with Lauren since her boyfriend was out of town. Rachel and Lauren started the night at the Circle K.
Oh, okay.
Coincidence, huh? Then the two ran back to Rachel's so she could change clothes. As she ran out the door, Rachel told her mom they were going to Hank's for ice cream. So is Hank's the name of an ice cream place or named Hank's?
No, it's the name of a place.
Her mom had no idea that that would be the last time she ever saw her daughter alive. The two went to pick up Tyree Jeter, who happened to be Sheldon's other half-brother, and they headed to Hank's Frozen Custard.
Now, during this time, it said that Sheldon saw all these people in the car, and they thought he was eager to keep track of what they were doing. He messaged Lauren, who ignored him. Then he texted his brother Tyree. And these are the messages that he's sending. He says, "Is y'all there already? I got left, huh? Who you all with?" And then Hank's closed at 10:30. So he is trying to track down what this car full of people is doing. Again, this is Rachel, her 17-year-old friend Lauren, and 26-year-old half-brother of the man she's dating and half brother of Sheldon Jeter, Tyree. So it's an odd group, to say the least.
When the group took Rachel back around 10:40 p.m., Lauren says that she watched Rachel go in the side door because she always watched her friends get inside safely. Rachel's parents say they did not hear her walk in. Either way, Lauren drove off, and 4 minutes later, there were reports of gunshots. Rachel died instantly, was shot multiple times at the foot of her parents' driveway, and she was only 33 years old.
Yeah, such a, regardless of anything that's happened, people don't deserve this for anything. Rachel's mother would say, that night, I knew it was him. Who's the him she's referring to? She has always believed that her daughter died at the hands of Sheldon Jeter. Lisa claims Sheldon was obsessed with her daughter, that he mistook her kindness as romantic interest. Initially, police looked at Frank as the person of interest. That's her most recent serious relationship, and one that they know ended poorly because they were involved in it. Soon after this, the district attorney announced that Frank had an alibi, was cleared, and no longer a suspect. And that's when police turned their attention to Sheldon. Police executed a search warrant at Sheldon's house and removed bags and bags of evidence. They noted that Sheldon showed little emotion at the news of Rachel's death when he found out. After these search warrants were executed, Sheldon's lawyer, Michael Santacola, says that his client has nothing to do with Rachel's murder, but that he was in an on-again, off-again romantic relationship with her. So this is Sheldon saying, yes, our relationship was more than friendship, more than internship, but I had nothing to do with her murder.
Detectives met with Rashawn, where he told them that Rachel was scared and was being followed. He told them about the summer of 2017. He called his brother Sheldon and asked if they had been in a sexual relationship with each other. Sheldon apparently responded with, "Why are you calling me, bro? You never call. You weird as F." End quote. Then Rashawn told them about an incident that happened 3 months before Rachel's murder. He was in the front of his house with Rachel when Sheldon pulled up and then took back off again. Rashawn called Sheldon and asked what he was up to. Sheldon returned, pulled up in his car, and got out and approached them saying, "That B word told me she was with Amy." So seems like super upset that he's seeing Rachel with his brother, right? Then Sheldon turned to Rachel and said, "If my brother wasn't here, I'd F you up."
Yeah, that's a pretty damning statement there, I think. When Sheldon was interviewed, he told police that on the night of the murder, he had been working on music all night. They asked for the clothes he was wearing that night, and Sheldon gave them some khakis, a windbreaker, a hat, and shoes that he said he had been wearing. But then, when police viewed surveillance footage from a local Wendy's, investigators saw that Sheldon was wearing something different that night, a light-colored hoodie, which was different from the clothes that he had given to police when they requested it. Sheldon's lawyer argues that when police searched Sheldon's room, they pointed to a pile of clothes on the floor and said, "Are those yours?" And that's what they took from him. When Sheldon said yes, they scooped the pile up and made note that these were the clothes that he was wearing on the night in question, but in reality, they were just a pile of clothes that were his.
So let's back up a little bit and to go into some of the police corruption that Rachel was talking about with her work with the newspaper. What is that one? The Beaver Countian. So Alquippa Council unanimously voted to put Police Chief Couch on paid administrative leave after the report was leaked. And again, there's just because that's a weird, I don't know, it's the timing of it. Why? You know, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, there's no reason why they woke up that day and said, you know what, somebody might ask about this. So we need to make this report.
I think it's because it was so long since the incident, it just seemed too random to have not been prompted by somebody or something, right?
Yeah, no effect happens without a cause.
Couch was part of a state investigation, and he fully cooperated. Assistant police chief took over and was acting as chief, and he recused the city department from Rachel's murder case and asked for help from the state police department. But then 1 year later, this chief was arrested and charged with felony distribution of sexually explicit material to a minor, felony unlawful contact with a minor for sending obscene material, and a misdemeanor corruption of minors charge. He allegedly sent obscene texts to a 17-year-old named Lauren Watkins. That name sound familiar?
Indeed.
So sending it to a buddy's daughter, sounds like?
Yep.
So this these messages were found when Lauren's phone was confiscated as part of Rachel's murder investigation. Other former officers have come forward to say that they think there are ties between the Alcapa city government and drug rings. This is a tangled web.
It is. And a lot of times we have cases and we'll say, well, the police could have perhaps protected the crime scene better, interviewed witnesses faster, whatever it may be. But here it seems there are at least people that think that they're directly involved in the promotion of crime. Sheldon continued to claim that he and Rachel did have a romantic sexual relationship, but that he had nothing to do with her death. But then things take another turn. Almost 2 years to the day after Rachel's murder, on May 15th, 2020, Sheldon went out to get ice cream with his friend Tyreek Pugh. And that very night, Sheldon's friend Tyreek, who he was with, was shot multiple times and killed.
Tyreek was considered family by Sheldon and his family. He even lived with Sheldon off and on again over the years. Investigators were at Sheldon's door the night Tyreek was killed because they saw Tyreek's address on his driver's license was the same address as Sheldon's. So surveillance cameras captured Sheldon leaving his home with Tyreek at 11:10 p.m. and later cameras recorded Sheldon returning home alone. Sheldon came home around the same time a driver found Tyreek's body and called 911.
Sheldon would be questioned, even interrogated the next day, and there was a state trooper that interviewed him that said, "It doesn't look good for you. It doesn't," which if he said that publicly for us to know about it, maybe he's just trying to send a message. But we also know that interrogations allow for lying and threatening of those that are being interviewed. A search warrant was served and executed at Sheldon's house yet again. Under his mattress in his bedroom, they found a gun. And ballistic reports showed that this was the same weapon that had been used in Tyreek's murder. They also found gunpowder residue on the steering wheel of Sheldon's car. So those two pieces of information together, he had the gun and there was gunshot residue on his steering wheel. That's pretty open and shut almost.
Yeah, and then there's the camera evidence that shows him leaving with Tyreek, coming home alone, and then at the same time he gets home, there's a call saying somebody's found a dead body, that being Tyreek's. Sheldon was arrested for the murder of Tyreek, and that was just 2 days after his murder. Now, his trial was in June of 2021, and he was found guilty of first-degree murder, and that comes with a mandatory sentence of life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Rachel Del Tondo's murder still remains a mystery, is unsolved, and there was a Pennsylvania grand jury that has heard evidence in the case, but there's not been an indictment, even though many believe that Sheldon is still the main person of interest. When asked about a subject, Beaver County District Attorney David Lozier said, "We're pleased with the quality of evidence that we have, and we'll make an announcement when we believe we can win a case to the criminal standard of beyond reasonable doubt," which I think is the right approach a DA should make. John, who killed Rachel?
Well, I mean, I think with Tyreek's death, you have some pretty direct evidence that ties Sheldon to it. And I don't know what the police have in regards to Rachel's murders that could be directly tied forensically without, you know, just circumstantial evidence to Sheldon. So is there evidence out there that exists that point to Sheldon other than we've got a gut feeling that it's him?
No physical evidence. I think all of it is circumstantial in that he had made threats. Other people observed the jealousy, and he was apparently, according to police, lying about what he said. So all that is circumstantial and very loose. Now, the DA here is saying we have some good evidence, but he's not revealing what that is. So this is an open investigation. We still don't know what the police have, but it seems like they're still focused on Sheldon, who is now in prison for another murder, which goes to show that he does have the ability, the capability to become a killer.
Yeah. I think in my gut that it's Sheldon who's been hurt and, you know, obviously had a place for Rachel in his heart. But, I think that his jealousy and everything, I mean, the motive's there. So definitely don't question that. But you need strong evidence in order to get him in prison for her murder as well. And I don't think you have justice until it's official on paper, in my mind.
Yeah, it's tough to do. A lot of times when somebody's already in prison, they can plead guilty to another crime and get some sort of reprieve or some sort of, I don't know, benefit, whether that's a reduced sentence or to avoid the death penalty. But I don't know what incentive they could provide Sheldon here to confess. And at that point, you just kind of have to wait for him to do it out of the kindness of his heart, because there's nothing currently compelling him to do that if he was indeed the killer. And this long after her murder, I'm not convinced that we're going to come up with any better physical evidence. I almost think it's going to have to be a confession from Sheldon or somebody else that saw it.
Yeah. And like you said, it's a situation where what incentive does he have to talk about it other than just the kindness of his heart? Because he's already got the maximum sentence he's going to get. So, you know, he could just let it ride and see what happens.
Yeah. This is truly a fascinating case as you start to tie it back into the potential police corruption, potential relationship with an underaged or inappropriate relationship with a student at a school, or even her powerful ex-fiance who wielded a lot of power in the town enough to just get a full police report with social security numbers on it.
Yeah. This whole thing just reeks of, you know, small town corruption and small town negligence from the, you know, being able to really do a good thorough workup of the initial crime scene of Rachel's. It reminds me of a guy we mutually know, actually the young man that I was talking about that I almost have a mentor relationship.
Yep.
His father was an FBI agent that died on, you know, in the line of duty, and he had busted a lot of small town corruption. I almost want to cover some of the cases from his work. I wish he was still around so we could talk to him more about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is interesting.
Yep. I think I would give us better than a 50% chance of getting something at some point. I don't know when that'll be. I don't know how it'll come, but I do believe that this could potentially be solved one day. Like you said, until there's a conviction and life served, there has been no justice.
I almost feel like Sheldon is dumb enough to have spoke about this with somebody. So somebody out there has probably heard these words from Sheldon's mouth directly. And I pray that they could come forward so that police have just another leg to stand on.
Absolutely. We appreciate you all hanging out with us throughout this one. Like I said, this one was very exciting to me because of all the different layers and interconnections. So I hope it was fun for you all as well. Don't forget to leave those 5-star reviews. That's the best thing you can do to help us, and we will continue reading those at the top of each show.
If you need more True Crime Cast and have binge listened to everything we already have available, go check out Patreon. We also have our brand new fictional podcast over there until August 10th when it's released worldwide. And with that being said, Jamie, until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.